Welcome to the ARUG Zen Center podcast. Our talks and discussions are offered for free to anyone who is interested in the ancient wisdom tradition of Zen. If you find these recordings to be of benefit, please consider donating to ARUG through our website, www.zenwave.org. Thank you for listening and for your kind support.
Okay, good morning, everybody. We are continuing with Shantideva's teachings. Way of the Bodhisattva. So, praise all who speak the truth and say, your words are excellent. And when you notice others acting well, encourage them in terms of warm approval. Now, commentary. This is good child-rearing instruction and good advice for adults as well. Too often, the only thing people hear from us is criticism. Shantideva encourages us to give approval when it is due and to express our warmth and appreciation. Now, the next part, extol them even in their absence. When they're praised by others, do the same. But when the qualities they praise are yours, appreciate their skill in knowing qualities. So, commentary. Rejoicing in the good qualities of others take us out of self-centeredness and expands our view of the world. This is a way to gather virtue, which helps us as much as others. Here, Shantideva addresses the difficulty we often have accepting compliments. We gather virtue when we can accept praise straightforwardly without either getting all puffed up or refusing to believe it. We gather virtue by letting ourselves be touched by someone else's appreciation of our good qualities. Now, there's a relevant story that relates well to the practice of praising others, and I would like to, most of you have heard this before, maybe forgotten. I'd like to bring it up in relation to this part. So this is a violinist told a story about a recital he gave for the great cellist Pablo Casals. He played for the master, but partly because he was so nervous to be in the presence of Casals, and partly because of his own nervousness in general, he did not do very well, and he was quite embarrassed. Afterwards, Casals gave him an exuberant and extravagant praise, excitedly pointing out the excellent things that the violinist had done. The musician was actually angry, thinking that Casals was teasing him ironically about his mediocre performance. Some years later, he performed another recital for Casals, this time being more mature and less flustered by the presence of the master. He played really well. Again, Casals exuberantly praised his performance. Then the violinist said, I'd like to bring up something with you, sir. Some years ago, I performed for you and did rather poorly, and yet you praised me highly. I did not understand what you were doing. Casals says, didn't you do such and such well? Didn't you do such and such very skillfully? Yes, answered the violinist. I praise the skills you had, replied Casals. As for the mistakes you made and the things you did not do well, I leave that to fools to criticize. My job is to praise. I leave that to fools to criticize. My job is to praise. So let's stop here for a few minutes and examine that together. What is this talking about in terms of praising others, giving and receiving? But let's look at giving first, giving praise to others, right? Focusing on what they do well. Often it's the opposite. Often we end up focusing on what people don't do well. Why is that? First, we have to examine why are we gravitated towards pointing out what people do poorly or not well, right? So what is it in us that pushes us to that in that direction, right? And then away from pointing out what people do well and focusing on praising.
Great.
I feel that when we criticize others, and I've seen that type of masterclass before, where there's just a bunch of criticism. You know, I have 2 degrees in music, so I saw a lot of masterclasses, and anybody would criticize because they were inserting their own sense of superiority into it. So if you're criticizing somebody and you're cutting them up, it's usually because there's something inside of you that's trying to either point in there, like I'm better, or feeling the lack in themselves and then pointing that out in them instead of praising. And Casals was always known for praising, just relating to that particular story. Casals was always known for his love of music and his love that other people loved music too, like he did. So he was always trying to insert positive and lift people up and be truthful at the same time. So I think people are just trying to, I think when I criticize others, I'm trying to insert myself in there somewhere.
Right, one second, I'm gonna comment on that. So yes, the root cause, the root cause of this is actually, this has something to do with the other, right? So when we point at another and we criticize them or blame them, in most cases, it has nothing to do with the other. It has everything to do with us. I'm the one who's saying you are wrong, right? And really what I'm saying by implication is that I'm right. It's mostly about me, not about the other, right? So the desire to point it out, the desire to say something in such a way or something that has this kind of energy in it often comes out of our own need to feel ourselves, to feel the boundary of me, to feel that I know who I am and I'm right, right? So it's some kind of self-affirmation using another as a way to bounce back from, right? As a way to recognize my own righteousness. As a way to mirror to me my own righteousness, and of course to show it to another. Yeah.
Mirren kind of said what I wanted to say about it. Of like, I think it's important to ask from what place the criticism is coming from. Is it, I feel like a lot of the times I would like to receive criticism out of, it would be no different than anybody else. I feel like the wanting to get better, wanting to improve, when you're so close to something, it's really hard to gain perspective. Criticism is a fairly easy task. Giving affirmative praise is very difficult because it's really difficult to be sincere in praise sometimes to others for those kind of ego reasons of feeling like you need to maintain some sort of authoritative hierarchy or, feeling of you need to chop somebody down to size or they're too confident or underconfident. It's very interesting to me. I feel like when those things happen, what you're essentially doing is creating an individual who can no longer trust their senses or ability to judge or discern or to act in alignment with their nature. Then it's a very interesting kind of dynamic, and I don't always know what's gained from it as far as being critical of somebody. Is that what they need to hear? Maybe they're hearing it themselves already. I know I personally bristle at criticism at times because sometimes the criticism I'm receiving is just echoing the worst parts of my brain sometimes. And I go, don't you know I'm already doing that to myself? And I feel like I'm getting it 2 times or 3 times over, and it gets really exhausting. And so sometimes I feel like the critical element of it is assuming a certain lack of awareness or stupidity of the individual too.
Well, so there is a, thank you for that. There is a question of where's the focus, right? So if there is a task at hand of there's something needs to be taken care of, and the focus is that rather than the person, then the what we call criticism can be what we consider constructive, right? So because it's not about the person, it's not the person that who's wrong. It's this needs to be done, and this is the better way, maybe the better way to do that, right? So the focus shifts from the person to the situation or the task, right? And that's what makes the difference, right? So we have to examine that. Now, the thing is, you know, you talk about what is lost or what is gained, right? So, and that's exactly what we need to look at, right? So criticizing another, there is a sense of gain, right? Because I am talking about myself in the background, right? Now, if I praise, then maybe I feel bad about, you know, I should have been the one doing that, right? Mm-hmm. How come this person is getting it? How come, you know, I'm the one giving this person the praise and not the other way around, right? So, but that's where we think, you know, the praise and blame, right? So the worldly conditions, right? So we live and die by that. We think that we begin from some kind of a sense of lack, right? And we don't think we are sufficient. So therefore, there's always that constant looking for praise and wanting to avoid criticism, because we live and die in that gain and loss mentality, right? If we are at the place of, and this is really what we're talking about, if we are arriving at the place of equanimity, understanding equality, then that's not an issue, right? Then when you say something to somebody about correcting something, it will not be about the person, it will be about the situation. And when you praise wholeheartedly, because there's no, because you don't feel like you're losing anything. And it has to do with our state of being and state of mind. It has to do with being at ease with ourselves. Everything comes back to that. Recognizing that, personally, right? Experiencing, realizing, and then moving from there. That's what makes the difference. One second. Anybody else before we go back to same people?
I don't like the word criticism. In my classroom, I try to say, to give them feedback, you know, to coach them or to give them feedback.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to see a situation and first tell them, like, what they're doing correctly as my students, and then what they need to work on, and then, you know, then I finish with something positive, because I myself, if somebody criticizes me, I kind of shut down, and I say, like, your those are your words and your opinion, has nothing to do with how I feel about myself at the moment, and I do sometimes get upset, and then I just, but if somebody tells me that, you know, if first you got to ask for permission. If you want to give somebody feedback, you know, can I show you a different way? And if they say no, then I step away. And if they say yes, then I proceed. Because at that moment, maybe they're not in a state where they want to receive, right?
Right.
So, but yeah, because sometimes, especially when you're teaching, and sometimes the people that you're teaching already have low self-esteem and they're afraid to try new things and stuff like that. You criticize them, you shut them down. They're afraid to trying and failing. So you gotta be very careful when you're giving feedback to someone or you constructive criticism. There's no constructive criticism. It's you're coaching, you're guiding, you're leading, right? And you ask permission because you wanna make sure that you're not killing their spirit, like you're not harming their desire to want to try and to want to do. Because I know how I feel. If somebody keeps putting me down about everything that I'm not doing right, I stop listening.
That's where it changes from what we call constructive to destructive. Yeah. So the word constructive actually means helpful, loving, guiding, caring. Right, so that word, in terms of what we're talking about in practice, it actually means including, not excluding, not pushing, right? So, and we have to also see it from a deeper level, right? if we get to a point of realizing equality to some degree, then it will naturally lead to that kind of pointing out, right? So we point out things from a loving place, right? Now, to focus on what people do well, right, is what he's talking about, right, to praise, it changes the energy.
Yes.
It changes because it encourages a sense of togetherness, right? A sense of, I'm with you. I'm here to support you. I'm here to care for you, right? And from there, everything relaxes and eases up, and then it's much easier to point out, you know, maybe next time it should be done this way, right? And it's not even, it doesn't even have to be, you should do it this way. It could be said, it can be done this way. It should be done this way because of this and that, right? But if it's the state of mind behind it that matters. If the state of mind is a cutting state of mind, right, and pushing, and then the words will express that. The attitude will express that. If the state of mind is from a place of equanimity, realizing that we are one, then of course the words will express that too. It will reveal what's in the heart. Right? So again, everything has to be looked at in a much, much deeper way, from a much deeper perspective, not just the words.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Even though they don't feel like they performed as well as they did,
mm-hmm.
you can see in their expressions and in their body language.
Yeah.
Oh wow, I did something, you know, really well.
Right.
And then they volunteered to want to do that again because they felt good about doing it.
Yeah.
Right. And then from there they can learn something else. And I said, well, you did that amazingly well. Like, is there anything that you have a challenge that I can help you? And then they said, well, then they can feel confident enough to say yes.
Yes.
Right? But I do see the change in the energy and in their face expressions, the body language, how they change, how they feel when you do praise them.
Yeah. Yeah. It does. It changes your own energy too. Right? So it's not just the other. It changes your own energy because it's not just one direction. It works in all directions. Thank you. Anyone else? Also on Zoom, if you want to speak, just feel free to unmute and go for it. So Gyoko, you want to say something before? Okay, I thought you raised your hand. Okay. Raise hand, but first somebody else beat you to that. One second. On Zoom. Yeah.
Just thinking about notes and criticisms. Sorry, my voice is echoing in the it's almost like speech jamming because I'm listening to myself talk in fever. Maybe somebody could just mute.
You sound good here, so keep going.
Just reminded me of a story about criticism or feedback or notes, and I had an acting teacher a long time ago who felt that they only once gave a successful note to a student, and a student of theirs was actually a lead on Broadway in a rather major production, and the student was so nervous that he wanted him to come and observe him and give him, you know, come to the dress rehearsal just to give him notes before the final show. And of course, you know, the teacher was like, well, it's really hard. What do you say right before a show opens to somebody when they're in a major role, you know, that doesn't, you know, ruin their confidence, but also maybe help, also gives them something to improve them. And he goes, the note he gave that he realized was probably the only good note he'd ever given in his career. So he watched the performance, and then afterwards he met with the student, and all he said was, he asked him, were you wearing boxers or briefs? And the student went, I was wearing briefs. And he said, wear boxers, let it all hang out. And apparently he goes, I went the next night and he was outstanding. And he goes, it was just this, but I think in terms of what we're talking about, it was a note that was bigger than just the performance. It was about the show, the person's potential to fit the role, and the ease in which they could take it, and it was funny, and it was a laughing moment between the two of them and everything. So it was just, I don't know, just came to mind. It's such a great story, but it's always bigger than ourselves, I think, in that respect.
Right, so to bring lightheartedness, right, and kindness and lightheartedness go along, right, go together very well. So to bring that kind of energy to that, it diffuses the... We put a lot into things, right? And we put more than what things need, right? Because we put a lot of the self-image vested in that, right? And we are protecting the self-image, but to bring some lightheartedness can help diffuse the situation, right? Or the energy, and then it starts to move. Yeah, thank you. Great. Great.
I think there seems to be something in our culture makes it the default to say something negative before you say something positive, that the kind of first response is to almost establish that you're not naive and therefore can see some sort of a negative thing about whatever it is you're talking about, and then you can go on to talk about something. But the first, and that's, I think, very powerful and also very it kind of infects because, I mean, we think it might be some notion of balancing or maybe being more judicious in whatever it is, but it seems to always put the negative first, and I think that kind of colors the rest of many of our conversations. And I'm not sure exactly all the ins and outs of why our culture does that. And that cultures might change from time to time, but at least my experience of our current culture for the last 40, 50 years has been that.
Mm. Yeah. Right, so the, of course in that there's acceptance and rejection, right? So. And the focus here is on praise, right? You know, we are bringing up the opposite of that too, right? Because it has to be looked at. But the focus is praise, right? And praise is acceptance.
Yeah, but it's almost like you have to say the negative before you can say the positive for some, whatever the reason is.
Saying who?
Huh?
Who's saying that?
Well, I'm just saying it seems to be part of the cultural norm. I mean, I find it in myself frequently, that if I'm going to say something positive, I somehow often will say something negative first.
Can't be an American thing.
Establish my credentials for then being able to say something positive.
Yeah, well, then okay, well, then if that's the case, then what if I don't establish my credentials? Mm-hmm. What if I have no credentials?
Well, I've been working on this.
But in general, right? So what about shifting the attention? Right, so then again, that's me, right? So if I take me out of the equation and focus on the other, then I'm free from having to establish any credentials.
Oh, yeah.
I'm free from being, right, the way I think I am, and the focus becomes the other. And that's freedom, because I'm free from me, right? And that leads to a sense of freedom. Right, and it changes dynamic, because acceptance is not just acceptance of the other; it's accepting me as I am as well. Right.
Right, I don't have to do that.
Exactly. Well, exactly.
But I don't. You have to, I think, gain a consciousness of that before you can enter into that.
Yeah, it's not definitely not automatic, because automatic we know what happens automatically, right? So intercepting that, having a practice. The whole point of having a practice is intercepting the habitual way of being, because we know it doesn't work well, right? So that's why we work on intercepting that. Hold up, guys. Anyone else? Do you want to say something?
Me?
Yeah.
Who's behind you?
She spoke.
I was thinking a little bit about the cellist. And I was thinking about my work and thinking about wanting, you know, this desire to focus on praise, but then being in situations when you kind of have a broader accountability where you can't only focus on what they're doing well. You have to also focus on what they need to improve, and delivering that in a way, you know, that gets back to the constructive criticism part of it. And I think just, you probably just saw the expression on my face as I was thinking through recent examples when I was talking to members on my team, when, you know, they're explaining to me why we're doing something, this is what I think we should do, this is what's on it. And I was just thinking about my response in that moment, and whether, how it kind of met the moment, in terms of that compassion and constructive feedback, or destructive feedback, I don't know, but it was definitely sharp.
Sharp?
Sharp.
Yeah.
Sharp. I don't care, you know, I don't care what person X thinks. I want to know what you think.
Right.
Thing, right?
Right.
So at the same time, very sharp, but also trying to say, like, I want to know what you think, right?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of, I trust your judgment, sort
right.
of message.
Right.
So can it can be sharp and also building that person up at the same time.
Right. So decisive, clear, right? No ambiguities in the delivery, in the message, right? Absolutely. But then is it a binary choice, right, between being this way and being kind is the question. And I think often we confuse that as if we have a binary choice there. That's something we have to examine.
And I think sometimes being kind in those moments, at least in my work, is actually more destructive. Because that person, kind to the point where they don't get the message that you can't outsource your thinking to someone else. That's detrimental to you in the long run if you do that. So it's not, I'm not saying be unkind, I'm saying...
be compassionate.
You can be compassionate with, you know, clear language, I think, as well. I don't know.
Yeah,
a
question, right? That's a question to examine.
Yeah.
Also, it has to do with, in this particular case, you know, you say, my job is to praise, right? Keep in mind, in this example, he wasn't his direct teacher.
Right.
Right? So then there is that. There are the particulars of the situation, right? So if you are, for example, the direct teacher of that person, right? So then what you will say will be different. What you have to say, your responsibility is different.
Yeah.
But even with that, right, even so, there is that question of how do I bring loving kindness and compassion to that, to the interaction of guiding this person or the group of people.
I can take it out of work back to coaching kids.
Right,
so
exactly.
You can't praise them when they're looking around because they're going to get hit by a baseball if they're not paying attention. You have to lovingly correct that.
Yes.
Not with, you know.
Right, but the praise may have
how
to...
How you do it.
The praise may have to be at another time.
Right.
It may have to be before and after, right?
Yes.
But look, the upaya. This is 100% upaya, right?
Yeah.
If we're using upaya in the right way, then yeah, we find a way to express that. Go ahead.
But I think in that kind of situation, it's for some people, you are praising them by correcting them because you are saying that they are going to be able to take your correction and deal with it. So it's, I mean, just yelling at somebody, which
not yelling.
There's a tendency to do, is almost like, you know, you're not really listening to me, and you're, but there's similar situations where the corrections, I think, are demonstrating to the person that you're dealing with a type of praise, that they're gonna be able to hear it and do something with it and then carry on.
Yeah, I think
so
we are.
The attitude, I guess, and the,
okay, we are actually starting to veer off the main
okay.
point of this. So, you want to have the last word? Go ahead. Go ahead.
I was just saying I know what he means as far as like with that, because I did something and I ended up directing, like the student took it the wrong way, and in my job they have to pass state board in order for them to get their license, and we practice state work. And I told a girl who is one student, I told her, I says, wow, if you, I says, oh, you did so well that if you go to state board, you'd pass right now. And she took it as, I don't have to practice anymore,
right,
because I did it perfectly, according to me, my learning leader, my teacher. And then after that, she kind of fell off. She wasn't prepared. She came in and I'm like, so she wasn't performing anymore because she felt she knew everything. She was okay. She could just pass her.
Right. So the point here is, yeah, the particulars have to be addressed, right? It's situation. But the underlying, and we're talking about something much deeper than thoughts, right? Than the situation, right? We're talking about an underlying state of being, state of mind, right? And praising others actually leads us to that depth, because we get over ourselves. And what we need to do is get over our need to criticize for the sake of criticizing. That's the point. Right, it's really to change our state of being, and to dissolve the rigid boundaries of our idea of self. That's the point. So praising others releases us from ourselves, and then we become naturally giving. So of course there are situations that we're gonna have to say something and guide people in particular ways. Absolutely, there's no negation there. So, but we should look at what he's talking about in a deeper way.
Just
go ahead.
Yeah, just one thing.
One thing.
I feel like what Rizan was saying about we have a tendency to say negative before positive. I think as a result of the hyper individualization and competitiveness in society. Because we all see each other as just I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not seeing, hey, look at this, we can do this, you know, this way.
Hence dissolving the rigid self.
Yeah.
Right? That's the point. Thank you. I can put one piece here. Thank you. I'm going to move on. The goal of every act is happiness itself. Though even with great wealth, it's rarely found. So take your pleasure in the qualities of others. Let them be a heartfelt joy to you. By acting thus, in this life, you lose nothing. In future lives, great bliss will come to you. The sin of envy brings not joy, but pain. Right? Envy. And in the future, dreadful suffering. Now, so we don't have to necessarily understand or buy into future lives or past lives. It doesn't really matter to understand this. Because what this is talking about is consequences of our actions, right? Because the way we act will have, however we act, there will be consequences to ourselves and to others, right? And we can examine our own lives, right? Whatever we can remember, and see when we have negative states of mind and then behave in negative such ways, right? Harsh ways, then what kind of consequences that have led to, right? Has led to this kind of way of being. And then opposite of that, right? So we can study it without getting into future or past lives, right? Now, commentary. We all want to be happy, yet our desire for happiness is frequently not in sync with our actions. So I'd like to, I'm going to finish this paragraph, but I'd like to go back to that and see where we're at with this statement, right? We all want to be happy, yet our desire for happiness is frequently not in sync with our actions. We overindulge in various substances. We tell people off because it feels good to set them straight. Instead of increasing our well-being, we strengthen the very qualities that cause suffering. Instead of increasing our well-being, we strengthen the very qualities that cause suffering. So, even though we all want it, happiness is rarely found. One way to guarantee happiness, Shantideva says, is to rejoice in the good qualities of others. Now you can see that this is talking about a lot deeper way of seeing it, right? Not just superficial, well, she said this, I said that, and I think this is better than that. We have to look at it much in a much deeper way. So Shantideva says to rejoice in the good qualities of others. Not only is it an antidote to envy, it also generates warmth and brings us heartful joy. When we begin to appreciate the kindness and courage of others, we find pleasure everywhere. It's a very, very important point, right? So when we rejoice, when we praise others, when we rejoice in their presence, in their being, what does it do to us? Now, initially, if we're not practicing, right, or if our practice is weak, initially, it may feel not comfortable, and we may not want to do it, right? So without some strength in practice, we will not do it. So we need to have some trust, right, and some depth of practice. But when we do have that trust and that degree of practice, we start to move in a different direction. And then we raise the antidote to the suffering, right, to what is causing suffering in the world. So, does this make sense? Do we see what he's talking about? I would like to first give priority to anybody who has not shared yet. I'm going to rephrase it. I would like somebody who has not said anything yet to speak up now. You know who you are. Yes.
Give it a shot.
Give it a shot. Thank you.
Okay.
All good.
One of the things that...
Just raise your voice. You don't have a problem with volume usually, so...
I feel like one of the things that takes away from my own happiness is that I focus on like what I don't have, like, oh, if I had a lot of money, then I'd be happy. Or if I'm being able to do all this stuff, then I'll be happy. Or if I'm able to jump really far, I can finally be happy. But it always, if you get to that point, I've noticed that when I get to that point, it's like I'm still unhappy. And at times, I feel like I'm able to get like even a little bit of happiness is when it's like I focus on what I have.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And not exactly focusing on what worked. Seeing happiness as like it's only one thing, it could be many things, or something different than what other people would perceive as happiness. Like, what would make me happy may not make Rayzon happy, and not feel like that's a bad thing either.
So what are we talking about? We talk about happiness. Let's change it to contentment, right? Contentment. Contentment may feel more attainable than a state of happiness the way we may perceive it or define it in our mind, right? So contentment, ease, or being at ease, right? Being at ease with oneself, right? So focusing on what will help us, what should we focus on to arrive at the sense of contentment? What do you think? You mentioned that a bit. Go ahead.
I say focusing on what we have.
What we have, appreciation and gratitude, right?
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely, right. So appreciating other people, appreciating the presence of another person, or being in the presence of another person, right? So instead of going to Here's what I don't like about this person, right? Easy. That's very easy. It comes automatic for us, right? So shifting from that to just appreciating being in the presence of another being, right? Just being in the presence. Or anything else. It doesn't have to be a being. It could be anything else, right? So practice of gratitude and appreciation. Direct link, direct gateway to a sense of contentment. Because the discontentment has to do with the opposite. Not liking, rejecting, complaining, right? All that. So if we shift from that to accepting, to experience, to expressing gratitude, we are practicing the antidotes. Immediately, it changes the dynamics of the moment. Do you see?
See.
Yeah. Great.
With my Achilles tendon healing and strengthening my leg, I've been focusing a lot on just like trying to get back to where I was, wanting to just run, jump, and be able to climb on things again. But I'm almost there. Like, I see the finish line, but it's like I'm not there yet. Mm-hmm. And it takes me out of alignment, and I lose track of what I have. Like, yeah, I can't jump far yet, but I can throw people and get thrown in Aikido.
Mm-hmm.
I can practice Bokken. And just be grateful to have that and be able to still practice with other people, especially when at a time I wasn't able to do that.
Right. Right, but then, you know, your process of going through that, right, being patient, as you, not all the time, but yeah, but you practice being patient, right, staying patient and allowing the healing process to take its course, right, and then working with that, appreciating your body, maybe learning also more about your body, right, about what you can and cannot do, right, because obviously that, you push the limit in that case, right, and you, something happened, for whatever reason, and then it pushed the limit, the body snapped, literally, right?
Yeah.
So,
quite literally.
Right, exactly. So, yeah. Yeah? You just nod. I didn't know if that means you want to say, but you, before, yeah.
Oh.
You didn't even know that you agreed with something.
I'm often very critical. A lot of critical thoughts, critical energies. I used to be very self-critical, which I think I probably have a lot of that still, but now it's more apparent how it spreads out to other people. And so maybe part of it comes from, well, it's a habit, and it's how I felt I was treated growing up. So those kinds of thoughts are in my mind. But I think, wonder if it's partly also related to having expectations of other people, things that I want them to do, ways I want them to treat me and not to treat me, so that I do and don't feel certain things. And the expectations are totally unrealistic because everybody is manifesting what they're manifesting. And I feel strongly that it does have to do with my relationship to myself. And how I'm feeling about myself.
Right.
And whether I feel sufficient and can in some essential way take care of myself and have what I need to take care of myself and move through this world instead of expecting wanting other people to do it because I don't feel sufficient in myself.
So this is a very good point, because that's exactly what he's talking about, right? So because of the way I feel about myself, I act in such ways, right? Harmful or negative ways, right?
Yes.
Harsh ways, right? So this is the expression of that state of being, right?
Yes.
So that is the... Now, what he's saying is you change the expression and you reverse that.
Mm.
We talked about the smile last week,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So you change... So you say, well, I feel stuck here in my state of mind, right? So leave that be and go to the expression.
Mm-hmm.
Change the expression. Although it's going to feel... like you're going against something, because you are, in a sense, right? But you are actually moving towards something. So for example, you catch yourself wanting to criticize somebody, and you catch it before it becomes a word, and then you say, I'm going to say something good.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see what happens. I'm going to go the opposite direction of what my mind tells me to say. And then experiment with that. Be curious.
Yes, sometimes I do that.
Right, and then we can see what happens in real time. We can see what Shantideva is talking about by looking at ourselves.
Yes. So when that works, it's like there are two energies. There's this habitual, critical, impoverished way of being, but there's some other capacity that
yeah.
I have, or
yeah.
that I assume everybody has,
yeah.
that can choose different kinds, can choose skillful words that change the situation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then people
and
become
then
mirror.
It's very interesting because you think, oh, well, I thought I was this, but I'm also this.
Which means I'm neither this nor that, right? So you said before, I tend to be critical. That's something to examine.
Yeah.
The language. There are critical thoughts in me that I experience.
Mm.
Now, other thoughts, other states of being I also experience.
Mm.
What aspects of me, of that, right, of that, what I experience, do I want to express?
Mm.
That's the question. Because when you express that, you strengthen that.
Mm.
When you express something else, you strengthen that.
Mm.
Right? So, again, it's not about the other, it's about us. And that's what he's talking about. That leads to real. It comes out of realization, right? But it also leads to realization. It's not, I'm going to wait until I'm fully realized, then I'm going to be kind to other people. That's how the mind works, right? And when people say, well, you know, I'm not realized yet, so leave me alone.
Yeah.
Let me criticize. When I'm realized, come back and I, you know, and then we'll talk about it, right? I'm not realized yet. So I give myself free rein to be whatever, right? To do whatever I feel like doing. But that's our mind saying that. It's not the practice telling us to do this. The practice is saying, practice. Practice, fall down, get up. Do it again and again and again. Right?
I remembered something else that I was going to say in response to you, but then it just left my mind. But never came back. So you were sort of wrestling, well, how can I be direct and get the job done and still be kind? Would that be?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was thinking maybe it has to do with, it's not really an issue of kind or not kind. It's an issue of not leaving traces. How does that sound?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was actually thinking about what you were saying too, and I was thinking when you were talking. I had a mentor once who in one of my previous jobs, when something, you know, a lot of times we get put into these situations where like another team will be explicitly tasked with criticizing our work.
Yeah.
That's like their goal,
mm-hmm.
and they review our work, they audit our work, and he would tell me, just pretend, just like, even if you don't believe it, just imagine, just come up with the most kind of like charitable kind of interpretation for what they're doing that you can come up with. And then over time, you do that once and it's like, you're just kind of like, this is just a game, but you keep kind of doing it over time and you keep sort of like, I've come over time, I mean, you know, I do it all the time, but when you notice it coming up, you know, you kind of tread this other path. So that even when someone's telling me, you should go back to school and study statistics, you, this model is garbage, I'm thinking like, maybe this guy just didn't have lunch yet or something. Maybe he's angry. Like, I don't know why he's talking to me like that, but maybe he just like didn't have lunch yet.
Yeah. So we need to wrap it up. Last word, anybody wants to share anything? Is this Asa going for a walk?
Yeah, I am.
Okay. Okay, Asa and Sammy. All right, see if Sammy wants to say something.
Yeah. Sammy, what do you have to say?
Hi, Sammy.
He seems pretty content.
I think something that gets in the way is our desire to control, right? Like, I think that that is a common thread with criticism and expectations of others or ourselves. And whatever we do to kind of lean the other direction and praise or express appreciation, it kind of opens ourselves into a discomfort, like it's uncomfortable because we don't really feel the reins of the conversation anymore. I know that's how I feel when I remember to start with what's great or what I enjoy or what you're sharing with the world. Like it's incredible how programmed we've become to do the opposite. But just wanted to share that I think releasing control and opening into the gratitude is, it feels like releasing control, and there's something, yes, it's hard to do, but I think that's our practice, so.
Thank you. Right. So, yeah, you touched on something very important, because there is always in the background the unwillingness to accept change. Mm. Right. The unwillingness to accept change, because if we accept change as a fact of life, right, that pertains to everything and everybody, then it doesn't matter how much I build myself up. It falls apart constantly. Because it changes constantly. So then when we truly realize this, we actually stop wanting to protect and defend that. And then we can shift the attention much easily to other people. Because life becomes not so much about ourselves and more about other people, naturally. So it's a very good point. So we have to finish, but as homework, right? Work with that. What she's saying here, we all want to be happy, yet our desire for happiness is frequently not in sync with our actions, right? So how about examining our actions, right, throughout the day, and then asking, is this in alignment with contentment? Is it leading to contentment, right? Or what is it leading to? Examining our lives, examining what we have done in the past, right? We can turn it around and study ourselves. So we don't repeat the same exact ways, hoping for different outcomes, which is what we do. We repeat the same things, the same ways in different places, basically, right? Hoping, well, this time I'm going to succeed, right? Everybody fails, but I'm going to succeed, right? So what is it that I can do to change that? And also to experiment with saying the opposite of what we want to say. To be curious about that. All right, so to be continued and to be changed. Thank you.